Well, we have a problem with the Minister of Health and with his ministry, because they seem to have reinterpreted protecting public health to protecting vested interests. And what's happened with radiation, for example, is the minister set up, or his predecessors set up, an interagency advisory committee. So there's an advisory committee on the health effects of non-ionising radiation. Now, you might think that a health committee, advisory committee, would have a number of specialist doctors and health professionals on it. But this advisory committee has very few doctors on it, and most of the people on it are engineers and electrical type people working for telecom and other corporates that want the radiation. Then you've got a few bureaucrats on it, but none of the bureaucrats on it have any real expertise in the biological effects of radiation. And in fact, it seems that they're chosen for their lack of knowledge. We did have an expert at the ESR, which is one of the government laboratories, Dr. Sophie Walker, who was a specialist on health effects of non-ionising radiation, and she was told she wasn't to go to any of the committee meetings, basically because she knew too much.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. On the phone from Nelson in the South Island, I have Sue Gray, and Sue has an extensive background in many of the issues that are increasingly pushing into our daily lives. And so I want to say, kia ora, Sue.
Kia ora, Tim, and thank you so much for inviting me on your amazing show.
Well, I like the amazing bit, and I'm so glad that you can be here, because I listened to you. I went up to Mangawhai about 3 weeks ago, and you presented to a crowd of 70 people, 70 local, ordinary citizens who were very much acutely aware of the problematic health effects of the 5G wireless network. And so you spoke to the crowd, and I'm asking you, can you essentially tell people what you said then? Because you are also involved with many issues, and I'd like people to hear a good background of who you are as a lawyer and why you're committed to children and the whole country to make sure that our health and all biota are healthy and that we can all live a good, fulsome life.
Great. Okay, well, I'll give it a go, and you ask me if you think I'm missing anything. So I actually originally studied science and biochemistry and microbiology and graduated with a degree in those. And then I was an environmental manager and did a training course for the then Department of Health and worked for the Department of Health and Onehunga Borough Council in Auckland before it all became amalgamated, looking at all of the chemical storage in around the Onehunga area of Manukau. And while I was doing that, I started studying law, and I got into law because I could see that the combined expertise could give you some real benefits over just understanding one discipline. And really what I've done ever since then for the last 30 or so years is to try and specialise in emerging issues on environmental matters and public rights matters. So over the last few years, I've been involved in the medicinal cannabis law reform quite significantly, acting for Rose Renton. I've been involved in the 1080 issue. I've been involved in fisheries management issues and trying to ensure more sustainable management and fair allocation of fisheries. The Marlborough Sounds, Sustain Our Sounds, is a community group that's set up to try and block the allocation of recreational space in the Sounds to a corporate entity that was overseas owned for salmon farming, because, of course, salmon farming has massive pollution effects.
Yes, definitely.
And, yeah, more recent, well, actually, 4G, I did a lot of work several years ago for communities around New Zealand who were concerned about the rollout of Wi-Fi in schools. And that my interest in that started in Nelson when Telecom wanted to put a cell tower about 5 metres from our local play centre. And our community sort of got quite concerned about that. And the more I researched it, the more concerned I got about radiation and the way the standards are written by the corporates and the way they're enforced about the government advisory committee, that basically if you're concerned about the harm, you're not allowed on the government advisory committee. So there's a lot of issues here, and it's about to get a whole lot worse with 5G, because the problem with 5G is that they're very, very short but very, very intense radio waves, microwaves, and it's looking like if it rolls out in New Zealand, there'll be a cell phone transmitter every 100 metres or so throughout our cities. So pretty much if you haven't got one outside your house, you're going to have one very, very closely nearby. And we haven't been asked about it. As public, we live here. Where's the conversation? When are we going to have the conversation? All of Vodafone and Spark are preparing to roll it out. The government seems to be preparing to roll it out, and we're still waiting to have a conversation. So, you know, this, there's a lot of issues.
It's building up, and this is not happening just in New Zealand. It's a global rollout of this technology all at the same time. And there are countries waking up, where, shall we say, citizens in all countries waking up. And we have Mill Valley up in San Francisco. We have, there's a special canton in Switzerland who's starting to shake the tree. There's Brussels in the heart of the EU wanting a moratorium. Do you know of any others that you can add into? Or
Look, I'm not sure of other communities, but I know that there's a lot that is starting to wake up about this issue. But way back in September 2017, some of the leading scientists on this issue wrote a letter warning of potential serious health effects of 5G. And that letter has since been signed by, I think, around 180 or more scientists and doctors from 35 countries. So the experts who are independent, who aren't profiting from 5G, are standing up and saying, we are really concerned about this. The problem is there's a time lag for the public to become involved, and there's an even bigger time lag before the bureaucrats and the politicians recognise what the public concerns are.
Yes, because, can I just jump back a wee bit, because there's groups in Albany, on Waiheke Island, in Mangawhai, in Torbay, and West Auckland, as well as Coromandel, Tauranga, Wellington, and also in Nelson. And
yes, and I can add Whanganui is another very active group that started up as well.
Excellent, yes. And so what this is, in many ways, this conversation with you and I, is a call to all New Zealanders, particularly those mums and dads who are concerned about their toddlers, their infants, because they are the most vulnerable. And also, we're just wanting to let people know that, in actual fact, there is a website, 5G-Free New Zealand, which is on Facebook, 5G-Free New Zealand on Facebook, or there's 5G.org.nz, 5G.org.nz. These are websites that you can readily access to be able to get information that you need, and also get information for you to be able to start off your local group, so that we can get the country mobilised across all the rural sector, villages, towns, and into the cities and suburbs.
Yeah, that's great, Tim, because what we've got, international connections. I'm on a member of ORSA, which is the Oceania Scientific Radiation Advisory Authority, I think that it is, with Dr. Mary Redmayne from Wellington, a lot of Australian experts, multidisciplinary experts. We set that group up, recognising that nobody knows all the answers to these things. So it's great to have some people with electoral expertise, some scientific expertise, some legal expertise, and a whole range of different skills, so we can all work together and piece together this big jigsaw puzzle of what's happening. Also has advisors from all around the world. Some of the leading experts have offered their services to assist, so we can tap through them and through some of the other just personal connections that people have made into the leading experts from around the world. We can also then share our knowledge through New Zealand with different groups, so that when a group starts up and they may not have too much information, but just as happened in Mangawhai, somebody says, hey, we're worried about this, what can we find out? There'll be people who will step forward with a whole range of different expertise who will be more than happy to share it, because the people who do understand the risks are very, very, very concerned and very happy generally to share what they know.
So true. I'd like to be able to put this in. I think it's very important. For a doctor or a professional, and in this case many doctors, they are in many ways not allowed to go public, because if they themselves go public, there is a very good chance that the medical fraternity further up will block them or actually take away their license to be a doctor, just like the academics in university. If you really want to speak out on an issue like this, particularly 5G and radiation, there are lots of intellectuals and academics within the university who are reluctant to come out and tell the truth about this technology for fear of actually losing their job.
And that's been happening around the world with radiation, that there are a number of people who have spoken out. However, it's changing because doctors and scientists are starting to realise, look, we're not going to get a second chance on this. If this technology rolls out and if it's anything like as bad as we all expect it will be, it could be the end of communities as we know it. But if it damages our skin, it damages our eyes and it damages our DNA, it also damages our mental health, our ability to think. So we will be not functioning healthily anymore at all anyway. So really, what are we waiting for? We actually have an obligation to speak out. And so we've now got a large group of doctors who are starting to talk to each other and share their concerns. And I understand that they're planning to come out publicly and share these concerns as soon as they possibly can. And there's safety in numbers, because the way it works in medicine is, if you do what other doctors are doing, you're protected. But if you're the only one who speaks out, then you're at risk. So as long as there's a number of doctors who share the same type of concerns, they can't be picked off by the medical council. That's where the crazy thing is, actually using the technology to connect with each other in a safe way, in a mindful way, is a great thing. But there's an optimum, you know, and you don't need more to achieve the most important things that we, the most important connections that we need.
Yeah, thank you for that, Sue. Yes, I heard last night that there is up to 100 doctors who are now coming together, which is a good, robust group to start the ball rolling to allow other doctors to start researching on their behalf. Now, can I mention, there's one small thing. Legislation New Zealand, what the New Zealand government, through Parliament, has legislated. I want to cover this. In particular, the Health Act. In 1956, if you actually look up Section A in the Act, the Ministry states they shall have the function of improving, promoting and protecting public health. Protecting public health. Now, this is really, really important, and this just came forth last week with my interview with Jody Brunning in relationship to health issues. Protecting public health. So this is where I think we need to also focus our attention. But
well, we have a problem with the Minister of Health and with his ministry, because they seem to have reinterpreted protecting public health to protecting vested interests. And what's happened with radiation, for example, is the minister set up, or his predecessors set up, an interagency advisory committee. So there's an advisory committee on the health effects of non-ionising radiation. Now, you might think that a health committee, advisory committee, would have a number of specialist doctors and health professionals on it. But this advisory committee has very few doctors on it. And most of the people on it are engineers and electrical type people working for telecom and other corporates that want the radiation. Then you've got a few bureaucrats on it, but none of the bureaucrats on it have any real expertise in the biological effects of radiation. And in fact, it seems that they're chosen for their lack of knowledge. We did have an expert at the ESR, which is one of the government laboratories, Dr. Sophie Walker, who was a specialist on health effects of non-ionising radiation, and she was told she wasn't to go to any of the committee meetings, basically because she knew too much. So we have to be extremely careful. I don't know why this committee's been set up the way it's been set up, and I certainly urge the minister to have an urgent look at it and change the way it's set up, because if he's to get expert advice, he needs to make sure that the people who are advising him really are the best qualified experts who are achieving the purposes of the Health Act, and that has not been happening.
I hear you very clearly. This is very concerning, and the listening public need to be aware that we have to have our governments, who are our paid servants, working on behalf of we the people. And I just want to swing round to, so we need to get a local strategy, and how do we encourage people at a local level? Because
yes.
Because people are saying, now, think local and act local as well. So have you...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And look, I'm a huge fan of people power, because the government represent the people. They're there to represent us. They're not there to follow their own whims and fads. They're actually there to do what's in the public interest. Now, over the years, they seem to have forgotten that, and it's people power that will remind them, especially with elections coming next year. The government, that's our one chance every 3 years to vote for the politicians who best represent the people. Now, there's not much time with 5G because they're planning to roll it out and they're planning to sell off the first spectrums early next year, according to a New Zealand Herald article. But I've also read that Vodafone are planning to roll out some this year, presumably as trials or whatever. So we have very, very little time. So my view is that the best thing we can ask for is exactly what the international expert scientists have asked for internationally, and that is a moratorium on the rollout of any 5G until we've all had time to have a think about it, have a conversation about it, look at all the harmful effects, look at the benefits, work out, do we want it? If we do want it, how are we going to have it? And what's the safest, most mindful way of using it? Because once it's here and once the spectrum rights are rolled out, it's going to be really hard to stop it, as we all know. Much, much, much better to just slow down the process and have time to think it out. Now, the world is not going to end if we don't get 5G this year or next year or the year after. We've got perfectly good technology for most of our needs. The people who want 5G are basically wanting it for driverless cars, for more complicated gaming machines, and so that there can be a centralised control of what goes on in your home to, you know, connect your dishwasher to your smart meter, to your radio, whatever, whatever. Now, in my view, none of those things are essential, and none of them are nearly as important as our health and our environmental safety, you know, because we're not talking just about human health here. We're talking about our bees, we're talking about our plants, we're talking about pretty much everything to do with nature, every living thing.
Thank you for that. So really, really important for people to take note. It's not an urgency, and yet the 5G fraternity are wanting to force the issue when in actual fact we can just take our time. The precautionary principle is the most important thing, particularly when it comes to all biota, which means babies and all children, all the way up to the elderly.
Exactly. Once you do the harm, you can't undo it. You know, we're talking about damage to our DNA, intergenerational damage. So intergenerational damage to our DNA may not show up for a year, 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, but once that damage is done to the DNA, it's permanent. It's a really, really big problem. It's the same sort of problem that we've had with the cell phones, where the studies that have only looked at cell term effect over a few years show nothing, which is exactly what the experts expected, because tumours in the brain take typically a minimum of 10 years, what's called the latent period, and they may take 15, 20, 30 years before they show up. So if you only look at something for a very short time, you often see no indication of harm. But if you look at it for a very long time, you see considerable harm. And the problem is, once you've done that harm, you can't undo it.
This is true. And so this conundrum we're in, we need, as you say, to have this moratorium, hold back and take it slowly.
Absolutely. And we need to get the message out to people very, very quickly. And so far, the mainstream media have been very excited about this Internet of Things and all the sort of new technology, and they have not been taking the health effects seriously at all. So it comes back really to social media and to communities having meetings and getting the word out step by step, slowly, slowly, as best they can.
So true. I was in the nuclear-free movement way back in 1984, 85 and 86. And what happened was that New Zealand, we had activists who were concerned about New Zealand being a target for nuclear weapons, that they went to local councils throughout New Zealand and passed resolution in the council for that particular district or suburb or town to become a nuclear-free zone. And what happened was it built up to such a degree that there were something like 105 nuclear-free areas, which took up 67% of the whole country, that then it gave the mandate for David Longhi, the Prime Minister of the Labor government, to then enact legislation to make New Zealand a nuclear-free country.
And that is an amazing story. Wasn't it great how New Zealand could lead the world then, and New Zealand can lead the world now with 5G, and it's perfect timing. Although the pressure is on, we've got local body elections. If everybody who's concerned about 5G goes along to their local body candidates' meetings and says, hey, I'm concerned about 5G, what are you going to do about it? We can select council representatives who are listening to the people and who are willing to make a stand. And that's going to be a very fast process because the elections are only a month or two away.
Very true. I think at Albany, just the other day, there was a meeting around 5G and there were four board members wanting to be elected to council. And so they're starting to realise that they've got to actually get up with the information, get up with the game, because a lot of people are going to ask a lot of questions, and if they don't know anything, they're going to be seen as not worthy of voting for.
Exactly. And also the DHB representatives, the district health boards have got meetings every month, but first we need to make sure that the candidates that are on the DHB are again representing the interests of the public and looking after preventative health, as well as spending a whole lot of money on treatments for all sorts of different things, because preventative health is the fastest, easiest way of getting the wellness of our population improved by don't make us sick in the first place, instead of paying a lot of money for drugs when we do get sick. So I would urge people to go to their DHB representative, well, prior to the election, to try and educate the candidates and select candidates who are concerned about preventative health, and then go to the meetings after the elections and encourage the candidates to make a formal stand against 5G.
Yes, a good strategic move, Sue. And can we talk about ethics? Because I think that ethics are really, really important. I happened to be just last month on the island of Kos, which is in the Aegean, and that's where Hippocrates spent most of his life. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about ethics in relationship to the Hippocratic Oath, because a doctor is supposed to be able, is supposed to commit to the health of their patients.
Well, lucky you being over in Greece. Well, yeah, look, the ethics is a really, really important thing. And somehow in New Zealand, and I believe it was part of the 80s reform and Roger Douglas economics, all this type of thing, everything became about money. And we lost the opportunity and we lost the forums to talk about ethics and what we as people actually want. And it's all just become, you know, the finances say we must do this. And now we've moved on away from this sort of economic thing to the science. And now they say, oh, well, the scientists say this and you're not a scientist, so you've got no role in this conversation. Well, it's not true. Science is necessary, but it's not sufficient. So the fact that something might scientifically work doesn't mean that it's a good thing to do. And the scientists don't get any training in that. What's much, much, much more important is looking or finding some commonality between good science, but also what people want, because if we don't make good choices for our future, we are going to be ended up living in as robots in a world where there's no nature and there's no role for the public.
I hear you very clearly. The whole human species, we spring up from nature. I have seen the Spark advertisements for the cars that they're going to have automatically drive down the road without a human being involved, solely because it's been driven wirelessly. And yet when you look at the advertisements, you don't see any flowers, you don't see any trees. All you see is a car, the road and the buildings, because the programmers and the the people doing the graphics for these advertisements don't see nature as an extension of themselves anymore. Not only that, nature gives us our breath. If we don't have oxygen in the atmosphere, we're going to have no life.
Yeah, and it's really scary, isn't it? Because effectively we can live in a box in a virtual world and we don't completely disconnect with nature. Whereas when you look at all of this, the medical research, connection with nature is absolutely essential to health and well-being. And it adds so much to the quality of life.
Yes, very much so. I mean, this is where, again, New Zealanders have this quality, though, you know, barefoot in summer, that we can connect with nature and we need to really start to breathe deeply of nature.
Absolutely.
Winston Peters once was very keen on binding citizens-initiated referendums. Do you think that once we get people educated that we have a referendum, or is this too early? Because we actually just need to get parents to get out and go to 5g.org.nz and have a look at the what's...
I think first we need a moratorium, because we've actually got to slow the whole thing down to give us time to get educated and give us time to have community conversations about this and what 5G might mean and what the alternatives are. What would happen if we don't get it? What would happen if we get some of it? And what would happen if we get it the way the corporates and Vodafone are currently planning to roll it out for us? And then it would be a great idea, once everybody's informed and we all know the options and we all know the consequences of the different decisions, then perhaps have a referendum. Brilliant.
Yes, okay. But again, an informed society, very important, and we have to word the referendum so that it's not a trick question. We need it very, very clear, because referendums can somewhat be ambiguous. So thank you for that. So Sue, where do you think we need to go with regarding to educating the people?
Look, I think the government should be making a commitment to educating the public and to slowing down the process, because I just think they've completely forgotten what they're there for. And they've completely forgotten that they're making decisions on our behalf. In fact, the government are in no position to educate anybody until they open their minds and educate themselves. Now, I've been OIA-ing some of the key ministers, Minister of Health, Environment, and the Minister of Technology, asking them what expert advice and what advice they've got from their own advisors about 5G. And the answer's quite scary. The Minister of Health says, well, the only advice he needs is from his own official advisory committee. The Minister for the Environment says he's, again, just taken advice from the Minister's advisory committee. And I went back and I said, but look, I know that you've been getting expert advice from people around the world and people in New Zealand who have got a lot of information to share about 5G. Why are you not admitting this in my questions to you or in your answers? His answer, or his official's answer, is, oh, no, 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 that's just treated as correspondence. That's not treated as advice. So what they're doing is they're reclassifying information that's given to them to make it unimportant so that they can choose which advice stream they get. Now, that's really, really dangerous, because we've got people making decisions for us who aren't informed. They're only hearing one side of the story and they're not looking at the alternatives. So on the one side of things, I think the government is letting us down big time, and they urgently need to review what they're doing and they need to get some independent advice that's competent. But on the other hand, we can't assume that the government's going to look after us, because we know they often don't. And we actually need people to stand up and say, hey, we're going to stand up and we're going to get this information ourselves. And so what I tend to do when I speak to groups now is say, look, fantastic you've come along to find out what you can find out. Listen to me, but go and do your own research as well. The more you can find out, the better. But then what you need to do is share it. Share it with your family, share it with your neighbours, share it with your workmates, share it when you're out riding your bike in the weekend, share it when you're playing sport, because we actually need to start talking to each other so that this information is getting spread far and wide. We've got great social media. A lot of the people that are interested, say, in medicinal cannabis have suffering quite serious immune effects from their immune system being overstressed. Now, they're typically going to be the type of people that get harm from 5G, because if your system is already compromised if you add more threats and challenges to your system, it's almost certainly only going to get worse. So those people need to be sharing with their network, and they need to be sharing with people that are concerned about other issues, because the people that are already concerned about one issue are likely to be more open to learning about other issues, and, you know, including 5G. So we're actually in a great position because we've got a lot of people that do have a good understanding of some of these risks and do have a good understanding of the public interest and the need for democracy to, well, it can only work if the people are asked about these things. So we've got people, we've got academics, we've got scientists, we've got doctors, we've got the public who are a great resource to share information between each other. And that's what we need to do, and that's what we need to do urgently.
I'm in full agreement. Network, network, network. Every human being is the centre of a network if we realise this.
And that's the great thing in New Zealand, isn't it? What do they say? There's only three connections through to anybody in New Zealand. So if we each share information through our networks and they share through theirs and they share through theirs, we can pretty much get information to everybody in New Zealand.
Yes, so many degrees, 3 degrees of separation. Now, telephone towers. Putting these towers up all around the town, essentially the telecos can just plump them on any ground that they can sort of get permission for or do a deal with.
Well, they can, yes. Look, starting in 2008, the then Minister for the Environment, Trevor Mallard, passed an exemption from all the usual resource management processes for radio frequency emissions, and there's been a series of other exemptions. They're called the Resource Management National Environmental Standards for Telecommunications Regulations, and the most recent ones in 2016 not only give a blanket exemption for the actual microwave and radio wave emissions, as long as they meet the very, very lax New Zealand standard, but they also basically give a right to add your own infrastructure on top of an existing lamppost, and in many cases to create new lampposts and cell towers for more transmissions. So whereas if you want to build an extension to your fence or something, you've got to go through a whole resource consent process, if you want to transmit microwave radiation, you're completely exempted.
Yes, it's an interesting one to the degree that I hear it is specifically quite legal for big wireless to put cell towers anywhere they want to on any road berm without a permit, and the National Environmental Standards, NES, specifically say so. So
yes, there's only very, very few checks and balances on that standard, and from what I can ascertain, most of them are just being ignored anyway, most of the compliance requirements. So they just do exactly what they like.
It appears that way. That's true. I'm speaking with Sue Gray, a lawyer from Nelson, and I'm also wanting to say, come join the Global Day of Protest, 25th of January, corner of Queen Street and Wakefield here in Auckland, 12 p.m, 25th January, and invite your children. Now, Dr. Sue Pockett, she's a scientist here in New Zealand. Now, she has written a number of papers, and they're being peer-reviewed, and they're in the international arena at the moment, and they are very, very powerful documents stating that we have to take an in-breath, step back, because this technology is far too vigorous, shall we say, or far too dangerous to be let out at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, she's been doing a great job. She's done a wonderful job writing the papers, getting them published internationally. She's a world expert.
Yes, it's good to have a New Zealander, a world expert, and one of the difficulties is that to get the people to understand and support her, that's a big one.
Well, it's even a bigger problem than that, because we have another world expert, Dr. Mary Redmayne in Wellington, who worked at Monash University and is recognised for her work on radio frequency radiation. But she was actively excluded from the advisory committee. So it's not just a problem of getting them recognised, but they're actively being blocked, because where there's an agenda with for vested interests, they will put a lot of energy into blocking people who are going to put forward an alternative view. So the whole democracy and free speech and informed conversation is just blocked.
very, very factual. This is, New Zealand was classified on Time magazine some years as one of the most honest countries in the world in which to do business, Sue.
Mm. We've been ranked by Transparency International as one of the countries where there's perceived to be the least corruption in the world. And we used to be number one. We used to be the best, but we've gone rapidly backwards. I'm not sure where we rank now, but we actually do have a big problem in New Zealand. I did a big case, it must be 10 years ago now, involving a former Supreme Court judge who forgot to mention that he owned a racehorse stud with the lawyer for the other party. And by the time we found out about the racehorse stud, he was a Supreme Court judge himself. And indeed, the former Chief Justice kept her racehorses at his racehorse stud. And it was quite a complex process to raise awareness about this issue and challenge it. Eventually, he was forced to retire because he had withheld information about his own apparent conflict from his judicial colleagues and from the parties. But that was quite a turning point in this whole perception of corruption in New Zealand, because up until then, the strategy of the government seemed to be to try and cover up problems rather than to shine the spotlight on them and deal with them. And I know from my own personal experience in that case, it took a lot of energy and a lot of persistence to get that spotlight shined and to get anything to happen. And I think our bureaucrats and our politicians still would much prefer to cover things up than to actually address them. And that's a big problem, because we're told that we've got this lovely country and everything's great. Well, clearly it's not great, because we've got some of the biggest cancer rates in the world. Our once clean water is now contaminated. We've got inadequate housing. We've got some really big social issues that we can deal with. And yet, on the face of it, we've got a beautiful country. So we actually do need to start digging deeper behind the sort of spin and understand what really is going on, because only then can we address it.
It's very concerning, Sue, and it gives us cause to realise that we all have to become involved. It's a participative democracy. We need to attend our meetings. We need to take time to write submissions. I wrote one last night just on for the heck, the Maui dolphin, because we have to commit to the future of our children and the future of our country, including the whole biosphere of our planet, because at present, we've found ourselves in somewhat of a global malaise that's settled on the population, and we're not really standing up in our power and saying, we want to commit to our community, we want to communicate and share our possibilities of a better tomorrow. And so I want to swing round to, you know, the Kindergarten Association and play centres. They're the most vulnerable, and I'm really wanting to be able to say and follow up on what your words were. We got to share with our neighbours, and it's at the cafe, it's seeing people, our friends at the supermarket, it's at sports clubs. Need to really, really get up with the game. And what do you say with our youths to be able to convince our young ones who are constantly looking into their devices?
I mean, we know that Facebook and some of these other systems are designed to addict kids. That's how they were set up, to create a dependency on them. So we've got to educate our children and protect our children any way we can, because I see it with my own kids. You keep them away from that technology as long as you can, but ways and means they get access to it. Once they get access to it, it changes their personalities. It's horrendous. And we have to be mindful. It's a bit like all this unconscious bias that we're hearing about on all sorts of other issues with Maori and prisons and all these other issues. Look, we only can deal with these things when we think about it and when we take active steps. It's not good enough to just ignore it and, you know, cover our ears and cover our eyes and hope it's going to go away, because there are powerful vested interests who are driving things in a direction that is not good for the public. And the public needs to make a stand. It's not good enough to say, oh, I'm not really interested in politics, because politics is affecting our lives. So we have to. We live here. If we want to have a community that we are happy to live in and that works for us, we have to stand up and be involved. And the amazing thing is that when we do get involved, we find a whole lot of other people who are actually very inspirational people who we become good friends with, and great networks all around the country. So that sense of getting involved, that sense of empowerment, it actually is incredibly rewarding as well.
You're saying it, Sue. Definitely validates you. You get up in the morning, you think, wow, I didn't know that person three or four doors down was so impassioned to do the same thing that I'm doing. And we meet good people. And, I mean, I'm a great believer in working, you know, with farmers' markets. That's where a lot of people converge. And this is where you can actually really sit down and have a cuppa with them and start talking, because the imperative now is for us to elevate ourselves out of our couch and start to go out and start talking to people about what's really happening. And as you say, there's an insidious power group wanting to control us more and more using technologies and using other means to distract us from being a human and being part of our neighbourhood and our community. We have to be able to find the energy inside, get our inner candle burning far stronger so that we can be effective.
Yeah, and look, I think we need to find the common ground, because the common ground is we're all humans. We all want to live in a happy, healthy life. We want our kids to grow up with a great future. We want our grandkids to grow up with a great future. And so we actually need to have a vision of what we do want, because all of the different protest groups and activists, they're actually pretty much fighting for the same thing, but from a slightly different perspective. And if we can find the common ground, community and environmental well-being is the sort of thing that comes to mind for me. Ask us first. Let's talk about what kind of place we want, and then we know with decisions whether they're going to take us closer to that kind of place or take us further away.
This is superb advice, Sue. This is really important for people to hear, so that they can feel that we can be part of our community and that of a greater whole. Have you come across an instance where you've been able to share information that has really been able to have a very positive knock-on effect?
Gosh, look, there's a lot of situations where you share information and sometimes you just mention it to one person, or sometimes you mention it to a group of people, but so often it can be the missing cog in some other thinking that's been going on or other groups working together. So I'm just trying to think of different examples. I mean, just at the Mangawai meeting on 5G, people turned up to that meeting and nobody had an idea really what was going to come out of that meeting. But what came out was a really positive vision where so many different people stood up from different perspectives with their own information, and you come out with something incredibly powerful. So it can be happening just in a small room with one or two people. It can be happening in a big meeting. It can be happening in a festival. But I think we have to give ourselves some headspace to actually think about, get out of our sort of day-to-day problems and in work and finances and those kind of things, and actually let ourselves think about what we do want and think about where we can go to share that kind of information and be with other people who want the same type of things and build our knowledge and build our vision.
I hear you. Very important. We have to think holistically, just keep motivated that we get people to focus on this, Sue. Is there anything you can throw in, such as process?
I think 18 years ago we had the inquiry into genetic modification, where we actually were asked, did we want genetic modification in New Zealand? And different experts were asked, and there were a whole lot of different farming perspectives and animal rights perspectives and all sorts of different perspectives. And that was a good process. People had sort of various criticisms about around the edges of it, but at least we had a process where people could make their views known, and there was a moratorium until that process had been completed. And really that is a model for what we need now with 5G. It's a new technology. They tell us that, oh, it's just really, we've already got these other technologies. But 5G is so much worse than what we've got. And what most people don't know is that 3G and 4G were never tested before they were rolled out. They were tested for operational functionality, but they weren't tested for health and safety. I often, when I talk to groups, explain how assumptions make all the difference. So, for example, with medicinal cannabis and hemp. It's a plant that's natural plant. It's been used around the world for at least 4,000 years. It's only been prohibited for less than 1% of its history, which is in the last few years, the last 50 years or so. And yet, the government assumes it's dangerous until it's proven to be safe. And they're using every step they possibly can to block it being widely used in New Zealand and to pharmaceuticalise the whole thing, because they say, oh, we don't really know if it's safe or not, even though their own advisors tell them it is. And yet here we have 5G, which has never been tested. It's new. It potentially is going to be 100 metres down every street, broadcasting 24/7, no time for your body to recuperate, no choice about whether you expose yourself to it or not. It's not like smoking where you can choose to smoke or choose not to smoke.
Or leave the room or the area.
This is going to be imposed on us, whether we want it or not, once it's rolled out. We can't turn it off. And yet, how does it work? This is treated as, let's assume it's safe until it's proven dangerous. By the time we prove it's dangerous, we know with tobacco it took 100 years between when the first suggestions were that it might be harmful and when it was officially recognised as causing lung cancer and that it was dangerous to have in our communities. We can't afford 100 years of dithering over radiation. We've actually got to do it the other way around. We've got to assume it's harmful until it's proven safe.
Yes, most definitely. And what I think there too, that if you're in a house and there could be a tower in four different directions, you're in the middle of a gigantic microwave oven.
You are. And look, the cumulative effect is often much worse than each of the individual sources. There's a very, very good example down on the northeast corner of Christchurch at Aruia, where there's a radio tower that was associated with all kinds of adverse health effects in the residents, but also in the animals and in the trees. The trees would actually contort away from the radio waves. The leaves would go black and fall off, all sorts of things. The insects left. The whole place was just like a barren wasteland. And it seemed to be caused by a combination of FM radio, AM radio, and the microwaves, which were the communications between the radio tower and other radio towers and between the radio tower and the radio station. And there was a preliminary health study done down in Aruia, and it found that there appeared to be some significant clusters of adverse health. And yet the funding then disappeared and it was never followed through. So we've got a lot of examples like this from New Zealand and internationally, and there's a lot of other examples like Aruia all around the world where there were adverse health effects associated with cell towers and with different forms of radiation. The Russians used microwave radiation on the American embassy in Moscow during the Cold War, and the American government paid bonus payments to its staff who worked in the American embassy in Moscow because of the increase in leukemia and other adverse health. So they know that there are health effects. They know that. The only question is just how bad those health effects are. And that's why we need the precautionary principle. The precautionary principle is supposed to kick in, and it's highly consistently regarded in international law. When you know that there is a significant risk, you must act with precaution. That's the problem. We've got the concepts, we've got the information, but nobody has got the courage to stand up and say, hey, stop, let's just delay this, let's just have a good think, let's just make informed decisions, engage with the stakeholders, the public, everybody's affected, and make some long-term sustainable decisions so we can look back and say, hey, when we had that choice in 2019 and 2020, we did the right thing for our children.
Well said, Sue. Yes, this is it. I would like, actually, our Parliament to stand up and say, we would like to factor children into every law that we pass from now on, because when we factor children in, we know that we're taking care of our collective future.
I totally agree. I think we should factor in children and we should factor in the environment. And it's starting to happen just a little bit. So the Whanganui River is recognised as having its own persona. And so when there are court cases and decisions being made which affect the Whanganui River, it theoretically has its own representatives who are there advocating for the protection of that river and what the river would do to protect itself. Now, why don't we roll that out for everything? Because at the moment, the environment has no voice. It's dependent on committed people who spend hours at night and weekends trying to fix something with no resources up against powerful vested financial interests who are making a commercial decision that they want to do something and they're going to try and roll out through whatever opposition they hit. So why aren't we financing and providing resources for the rights of our children and our grandchildren and for our environmental protection to be factored into all these decisions? Actually, a lot of the Maori tribes have got some very, very good thinking on that type of thing. And it's starting, I've been working with Te Whawhatoa on some issues recently, and they've got some beautiful thinking, kaitiakitanga,
yes,
to look for the future. It's superb. But that's even still marginalised and treated as sort of an annoyance by the mainstream, because obviously it doesn't suit their interests. But it's the only way forward. We have to work out ways of looking out for the future, because otherwise we've got no future.
You've said it so well, yes, because I'm part Māori myself, and I have many Māori friends, and they are echoing exactly what you are saying, Sue, and I just really appreciate you for including that there. Now, another thing, too, in taking care of our future and relationship to children, I mean, I would like to have every politician put on a performance contract that we look at once every year.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great? The problem we have at the moment is nobody is representing the public interest, because politicians have got their own little hobby horses and then they sign coalition deals and whatever else, and so they get sidetracked. They go in there with these great ideas and then they all seem to get sidetracked. And the way I understand it works, if you're in a major political party, if you don't toe the line, if you cause trouble, if you raise issues that your bosses don't want, you never get promoted.
Correct.
So there's no way of bringing new ideas, important ideas, and bringing change through the system. You know, we're very much protecting the status quo or the very limited chosen ideas. There are new political parties starting up. It's very hard for them to get traction. But, for example, the New Zealand Outdoors Party I've been working with, they've got a fabulous vision statement, which is very consistent with the type of kaitiakitanga, long-term protecting the environment that we were talking about before. So there is some great thinking being done, but we somehow need to get these type of things out there talked about as well, and to entrench these new ideas and develop these new ideas rather than just defaulting back to the old system that's not working for us.
You said it so well. I agree. So in closing, Sue, this has been wonderful. I would really like sometime in the next few months that some courageous government minister, preferably the Prime Minister, who has a little baby Neve to take care of, that they will actually stand up and say, look, let's go for the precautionary principle.
Absolutely. Let's get it out there. Get our politicians even aware of these things. If the public make a big enough fuss, they have no choice. They have to start listening to us. And when they listen to us, they will see the sense in what we're saying. And once you understand these long-term implications, you sort of can't unlearn them. Once you understand that the decisions that are made now will affect our future, you have to commit to them. And so it's really only by the old blinkers on and earmuffs on and, no, I'm not even going to look at that, that they get away with doing what they're doing. So that's where the people power comes in. If the public make enough fuss and say, hey, this is very important to us, you must listen to us, you must engage, you must have a moratorium so that we can then have this conversation, that's when the politicians will change. Unfortunately, they're not showing any sign of leadership at this stage, but I urge them to have the courage to actually break out of their bureaucracies and actually stand up and act in the public interest.
Well said, Sue. So do you have a website that people can come to you or any other?
Yes. Look, I've got a very new blog that I've started up with the help of a friend who's far more technology savvy than me. So it's www.suegray.co.nz. www.suegray.co.nz. And I've only been using it for a few weeks, but I've already been getting thousands of hits on it, which is really exciting. And I've been posting on mainly on 5G, on 1080 and other poisons, the Brodificum as well, which the blue cockroaches, which killed the Tuatara at Nelson Zoo, that type of thing, and on medicinal cannabis, and also on people power. So they're my kind of main interests at the moment. And I've got a lot of comments coming in as well. So if people want to give me some blogs, I'm more than happy to post sort of like-minded issues on my blog as well.
This is excellent. Thank you. Well, so all we can say is, dear people listening, we ask you to please commit, take 10 minutes out of your day today and 10 minutes tomorrow and over the next few weeks and months to go and research yourself on 5g.org.nz, or you want to go to 5G Free New Zealand on Facebook and follow up with your website too, Sue.
Thank you, Tim. Look, you are doing such a great job. I just hope everybody's listening and sharing this, because there's so much to think about.
There is. We have to be active, very active in our life now. We cannot allow politicians to run away with their own agenda. We have to really sit on them, make sure that they actually act on our behalf, and that goodwill comes out of us completely.
Yeah, I call it choosing time. You know, we live here. Let us have some choices.
Yes, yes. Well, again, informed, conscious choices.
Absolutely. And that's where the people power is so powerful.
Excellent, Sue. Thank you for giving up your valuable time. I really appreciate what you've said today. Really, really wonderful. And so we look forward to a big uptick in people's involvement in this extremely important issue of 5G and putting it to rest until we actually get more information.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tim.
I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. And I hope your children have a lot of loving time with you so that you're not too stretched doing everything else in the world.
You know, it's busy times, but it's all good fun. Everything works somehow.
Yeah, this is wonderful. Yeah, well, we just have to also focus on synchronicity, serendipity, and if we're doing the work for the betterment of the good, it happens.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I totally believe that too.
Yeah.
And good people find each other and inspire others, and suddenly you get a whole snowball and amazing things can happen.
I can assure you. It's really wonderful. It's a glue, actually, that keeps everything together. And I have two things, doing random acts of kindness and paying it forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Good on you.
Okay. Catch up now, next time.
I better go because I've got a meeting with the hospital board.
I hear you. Very good.
Yep, but I'm really happy to help any time. So just give us a yell if you need anything from me.
Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send, and remember, even Facebook, to tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it, spread it, radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies. But of 7.7 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Mueller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. This is an invitation for mums and dads, particularly with children, here in Auckland, New Zealand, to join the Global Day of Protest and say no to 5G. Keep us radiation free. Where? Corner of Queen Street and Wakefield Street. When? January the 25th, 2020, time 12 p.m. Bring your children, bring placards and umbrellas, rain or shine, 25th of January, 5g.org.nz. This is Tim Lynch.
And Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say kia kaha and haere ura.